Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, space time is here. That's right, we're talking about Buck Rogers in the 25th century on our Kill by Kill Patreon. And if that sounds strange to you, first of all, are you new here? And if you are, thank you for joining us. On Patreon, we do two things. We talk about something we want to talk about, or we talk about something you ask us to talk about. And this month, it's an us, or specifically a me, as we talk about Space Vampire, episode 14 of Buck Rogers in the 25th Century. And as always, there's only one person that if I'm going to go on a space holiday with, I'm going to ask her to come along. The one, the only, Gina Radcliffe. How are you doing today, Gina?
I'm good, but I have to tell you, I am a short, slightly pudgy woman. I'm not going to look good in those skin tight space outfit with a little cropped shirt that Erin Gray wears. That's going to look like, you ever like open up a can of Pillsbury biscuit dough?
Sure.
And okay, a little bit bulges out of it. That's kind of what I would look like in this getup.
Well, Erin Gray looks fantastic in this. And even she suffers at moments from the constraints of these costumes. They don't flatter. Like Gil Gerard, again, for 1978, he was built. Like now, that would be like a dad bod.
He's burly, but like, definitely.
He was considered manly in 1978, which meant he had some heft to him. But in those Lycra things, it doesn't do him any benefit at all.
Oh,
and
yeah.
Then they add that black belt to it.
Yeah.
He's handed a belt.
He's handed like, here, take this special belt. And it's a fucking weightlifting belt.
I'm like, what does the belt give him, Gina? I'm still flummoxed. Where at the point, like, we're going to search this ship. And he's like, okay. And he goes, well, you better take one of these belts. And he's like, sure. And he puts on a belt. I'm like, what the fuck is, there's nothing on the belt. What am I missing here? Is he going to be lifting things? Are they worried that he might get a hernia or something?
No, he isn't that age.
Yeah, it's true. You lift, this is before we really understood that you got to lift with, your knees. And not with your back. So, and listen, Gerard looks like he's been lifting a lot with his back in this. So my admission here, and this is entirely my fault. We bounced around a bunch of things that we were going to cover here this month, and we kind of decided The Empty Man, which I've been kind of like hyping a bit on Twitter and whatnot. I really like that movie. But it's also over 2.5 hours long. And it was a lot given our current schedules. So I ruminated on something that I had watched in my youth that had scared me. And that thing was the vampire in Space Vampire.
I love that this scared you. I think that's adorable. I do remember watching Buck Rogers when I was a kid, although I was more a fan of Battlestar Galactica.
Sure. You that's your flavor of Glenn A. Larson. I get it.
Right. I can't say I know of this episode because it's fans of the show seem to name this one as a favorite. I don't remember why. I don't know. Fine. I'll take their word for it. Either. I don't remember this episode. I'm trying to think, come from the mind of a child as to if this would be scary. And I guess so.
I saw that space vampire and it, again, I was such a scared child that the idea of the prairie scared me. That the Pink Panther theme scared me. So I was very vulnerable to anything.
I have to, again, look in terms of, in this, we've talked about the touch points before, like the differences in our childhood.
Yeah.
In which you were very sheltered from a lot of pop culture and I was very not sheltered from a lot of pop culture. So this aired in 1980.
Yeah.
Which would have been within a year after Salem's Lot aired.
Right. And I didn't know that Salem's Lot existed.
Right. Which I did. I have a very strong recollection of watching it on television and I would have been about 7. and so that scared the holy hell out of me. And it still holds up as pretty scary.
Oh no, so, it is genuinely a scary movie.
So I think that when you compare, say, like Mike Ryerson's scene in Salem's Lot to the space vampire in this, having seen that even when I was a kid, I probably wouldn't have thought much of the space vampire.
No, whereas I was petrified. And the very idea of this walking, talking broccoli with a unibrow.
I was going to say, I love that he constantly looks like someone just farted in front of him. He just has this kind of, I guess he's supposed to be sneering, but he just sort of, he's just sort of making an ew face.
They've definitely shown him a picture of Nosferatu and said, go for this. And he's like, I can't see that with these contacts in. And the massive head you've put me into. So I'm just going to go and like lean back because I can't close my mouth with these fucking teeth you've given me.
Oh, the Dracula references in this, they are so proud of themselves.
It's so hidden. You never would have known with a ship called the Demeter.
I groaned out loud when they said that. And they were like 100% straight face, like, yeah, this is a really, this, only the fans are going to get this one.
Only the real ones are going to catch this reference.
Yeah. And I'm like, fucking really? The Demeter?
I mean,
there's a reference to a character named Helsin.
Yeah.
He's a hunter of some kind. Like, you don't say.
And oh my God. And then Buck at one point goes, you know, it might be some kind of vampire. And the guy who he's acting with goes, I don't know what that means. I have no cultural reference.
Excuse you, that guy that he's acting with is one Christopher Stone of The Howling. Thank you very much. Mr. D. Wallace to you.
Well, soon to be ex Mr. D. Wallace, because they got divorced pretty fast after.
No. I thought he died. I was pretty.
Oh, is it that?
Yeah, no, I think that they stayed together and then he died at some point. Now I have to. You'd be nice now, to
please research this.
You'd be nice to Christopher Stone. He has an excellent mustache.
He does. He has one of those lion faces. That makes him look like maybe he was the Beast in Beauty and the Beast, but no, he just had sex with a werewolf lady in The Howling.
You know, as one would. I mean, have you seen that werewolf lady?
When are we doing The Howling?
I don't know, but she's a super babe.
She is a super babe. But he needed to keep it together because that was his idea. And then he goes up there and he fucking cheats on his wife with a werewolf lady? Come on.
So just to clarify, I am correct.
Okay.
He married D. Wallace in 1980, the same year that this episode aired.
Okay.
And they stayed married until his passing in 1995.
Okay. All
right. R.I.P.D. Christopher Stone and your excellent mustache.
True. Yes. I once again recall my son when watching E.T. and her breakdown at the sink when learning that her ex-husband has gone off to Mexico. And he turned to all of us and said, that woman needs help. Just needs some help.
It's a very astute boy. You've raised a very sensitive child.
When I met the one and only D. Wallace Stone, I told her that story and she was slightly flummoxed. He just wanted you to have some help. He felt you were unmoored. This was before you were aware that there was an alien living in your house. Like, you were already in a vulnerable spot. You just needed help.
Father, why have you made me watch Diary of a Mad Housewife?
You need to understand. Yes. I mean, it's made for some very awkward viewing that we're forcing him to watch White Lotus. But I think that, you know, now that we're four episodes in, he's really beginning to understand the didactic involved.
I look forward to you explaining how you're going to explain to your child what analingus is.
the cackle that came out of me when she opened that door. Oh my God. That is, I've never hidden behind my hands in laughter as much as watching that show. Everyone is just terrible, and it's delightful to watch, but it's also very hard to watch.
So basically terrible characters, delightful but hard to watch. That's basically HBO prestige television in a nutshell. Right,
exactly. It absolutely is.
And at least one scene of from behind sex.
Yeah, well, got to give something for daddy, you know.
Why do you make me watch this artsy show?
Oh, okay. Well, now, I didn't know that cowboy was involved in this. All right.
Now we're cooking.
Is analingus eating ice the new cowboy position for HBO? Is that the direction?
Yeah, it definitely feels like, yo, let's see what we can get away with.
Right. Because they're definitely asking a lot of people to stuff their face up another person's ass, which, again, not something I'm uninterested in, but these people are working together. You know what I mean? It just takes a lot of trust. That's all. What were we talking about again?
Buck Rogers.
Space vampire. Buck Rogers. I mean, can you imagine you're on the set of Buck Rogers in the 25th century? And you're all like, all right, here's the thing, though. At one point, you're going to walk in and you're going to watch the space vampire. He's got his nose up Wilma's ass. Now, and just to watch like all of the brain they have start leaking out of every hole in their head. Like, no, this is what television is going to become. Why don't we get there first, everyone?
Yeah, we're talking
it's Buck Rogers in the 25th
we're talking
century.
We're talking about the future here. Come on. The far-off year, 1987.
It is Buck Rogers in the 25th century, and by the 14th episode, they have now nerfed Wilma Deering to the point where she has to be taught by basically a fucking caveman how to drive a spaceship. In the first episode, she's like has a gun on her hip and she's shooting people left and right. She is a total fucking badass. And 14 episodes later, they're like, tell me how to drive this ship, Buck. Like, what the fuck?
Oh, you
my
know
God. How to drive every ship.
I got such a chill in a line later in this episode where to describe the plot, it's... You know, it's Dracula in space where this spaceship crashes into another ship and it's full of dead people. And they, you know, they find the captain's log and it's, oh, well, yeah, we have this mysterious visitor. And oh, no, all the crew is starting to act very strangely and, you know, et cetera, et cetera. You know, everybody knows the basic story of Dracula. So Christopher Stone's character is very dedicated to the idea that this is some sort of highly contagious virus, while Buck Rogers like, hey, perhaps it is a vampire. which they are apparently the concept of a vampire has been, even though right now in the 21st century they're about as popular as ever.
Yeah, it's ubiquitous.
Like, yeah, it somehow has been phased out at some point over the next couple hundred years. Vampires don't exist anymore, except they do because there's one on the ship.
The IP business is so fucked in the 25th century, Gina. They're going to have to come up with all new art.
But there's so at one point, so Christopher Stone thinks that the character thinks that Buck is, you know, hallucinating, and even when the space vampire, who is only visible, conveniently only visible to Wilma, shows
so
up and attacks.
She can be given that acting challenge.
Right. So it attacks her. Buck attacks the vampire. Christopher Stone doesn't believe him, takes him into quarantine, and then says, Wilma says, he's right. He's not lying. Something attacked me. And you know, Christopher Stone does that whole, you know, caressing the shoulder thing that men like to do to women when they're trying to comfort them, but it's like, you know, only a matter of time before you're riding my crank. You know? And he's like, and he says, I'm sure you believe that. And I'm like, oh, boy. And the sad part is he's not a villain in this.
No, no, he's only a hero.
Yeah, he's not at all. Like, you would expect that, you know, if this was now, he would be working for the vampire.
Right.
But he's,
right. He would be. That's the one thing this is missing, is someone who's eating space bugs.
Right. I don't know how vampire. I don't know how they skip that over. But
because they spend all that extra time just introducing scenes with 8 to 10 seconds worth of silence.
Right. I mean, at worst, he's sort of a rival with Buck for Wilma, yeah. But that never really comes to anything. But yeah, he's a co good guy in this, and he's just like, you know, gaslighting her. But that was normal. Dear. No one thought of that as you know, damaging. He's just comforting her. You know, I'm sure you believe that, honey. Let's go let's go rest.
Yeah. Let's get you lying down in the same Lycra outfit, and like, she's fit as hell. And even she can barely contain this fucking outfit that they've given her. It is just, it should be illegal.
Yeah. I mean, nobody knows the concept of vampires in the 21st century, but everybody knows aerobics. Yeah. You know, jazzercise is still a thing.
My favorite incongruous element. Is it like, it was always a struggle for Universal sci-fi shows to demonstrate that something was in the future. And in here, when they're in the bar setting, it sounds like a casino for some reason. And in the background, you can see people playing stand-up video games with 25-cent quarter slots in them. Wait a second. People are still using coins and they're eating food discs. Sure. Why not?
I mean, you know, the food disc that's right now, somebody put out a food substitute, just basically a pressed cube of protein. Pressed cube. So, you know, Buck Rogers correctly predicted that. Thank you.
And we managed to get that 4 centuries early. So good for us.
The future is now.
Yeah. I love that Stargates in this movie, in this TV show, always have thunder sound effects. Wow.
I always think of stuff like that. Whenever I see that, I always think of Airplane 2.
Right.
And the moon base. It's like they open up the doors by shushing at it.
Yeah. There's a lot of shushing doors in this one. These doors be thick as fuck, though. Whoever's manipulating those doors is a real workout for themselves. At one point, they're talking about repairing Twiggy, a very annoying robot voiced by Mel Blanc. And it is implied that they're doing this so that he can dance with his girlfriend, and that he was damaged by dancing with her too much. And I'm beginning to wonder, did Twiggy literally fuck his brains out with another robot?
Hey, you know, he's a consenting legal age robot. Don't you judge Twiggy.
I mean, just when we're talking about like what survived, this robot understands high-fiving and what's up, man, but vampires have disappeared from the lexicon.
Vampires, okay, sure. And Muhammad Ali.
And taking care of a plant. These are all things that have disappeared from time.
But the high five will live on forever.
But he walks into a room and says, "Yes, I understand jive," and just does it.
Yeah, they had a very interesting idea of what would. What would still be part of the, you know, vernacular, and just what would disappear when by the time this show aired, you know, even just disco was already on its way out. and like the concept of the singles bar.
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. When are we bringing that back? That can't possibly go wrong. Oh my God. Yeah. At one point they give him a hernia truss. He referred to Twiggy as an ambu quad.
Oh yeah. I was like, I, one of my favorite things in sci-fi movies is when they are reluctant to use the word robot. Yeah. Like it's a you know, a synthetic humanoid. It's an artificial nano man.
You know, artificial nano man.
It's a robot. It's like it's sort of like The Walking Dead's reluctance to use the word zombie.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, do zombies not exist in this universe? This is just like Night of the
Living Dead never came out.
Right.
Rob Zombie never rocks.
Like, why? I mean, zombie isn't a copywritten word. You could call them zombies. Like, no, they're walkers.
Yeah. Well, you know, it just caught on and there's no one there to tell them otherwise. There's no podcast and there's no shitty YouTube video person to tell them that they've, you know, social justice warriored out the word zombie for some reason. Oh my God, the world is so fucked. Anyways, so as you mentioned earlier, the captain of the Demeter has been recording herself. And this is another woman who flies a spaceship. I know this is hard to believe, but in the 25th century, women be piloting spaceships. She's recorded herself on tape. On tape.
It's a VCR. They have a VCR.
Mini VCR with three buttons that are not labeled.
The height of 25th century technology.
This entire show, and I love this from Universal TV design, because like Universal TV just has like an aesthetic to it where everyone decided like, this is the way we do this kind of television show. You can see how Columbo morphs into Murder, She Wrote in the sort of set design, because they're all doing it in the same place. And you can really see like, there's a reason like $6 Million Man to Bionic Woman to Battlestar Galactica to 25th century. Like they all have like similarities where they're reusing props and they love colored cubes with no labeling.
Yep.
Like just, oh my God, it's so great that we have three of these buttons. What do? I don't know. And no thought into it. Let's just put it on screen. And right around that time, they decide this is a virus of some kind. And you just, the one that went through my mind is Kurt Russell going, everybody's tired. Nobody trusts anyone.
Well, the funny thing is that the woman playing the captain of the mm-hmm. Demeter isn't mm-hmm. really the strongest actor in the world. So her mood stays exactly consistent.
Yeah.
From log to log. Like the first one, she's like, we have a strange passenger on board. And then the next one, people are getting sick. They're acting very strange. And the next one, well, there's only two of us left now. It's like, I'm glad you're not too ruffled about this, Captain. Well,
someone's got to keep their, emotions in check while they're making this mini VCR diary. Meanwhile, the director of this episode has pointed a camera at Aaron Gray and said, I want to film you having every emotion so I can just cut in 2-second snippets of it endlessly into every single scene. And she's like, okay, it's a paycheck. And that's what happens during that entire thing. You just cut to her and she's like, oh, I'm so scared. I'm very concerned. I am puzzled. I'm kind of horny now. It's all in there.
I'm very cold.
There's mostly a lot of very cold.
Mostly she's cold.
And then Buck is all like, you mean it's a vampire? And the ship's doctor's like, I don't know what that is. Meanwhile, back on Earth, Dr. Hauer, a character who's barely in this and really doesn't need to be in this episode, but is shoved in there anyways, is apparently feeding the plant that Buck asked him to take care of with Brondo. Did Idiocracy rip off Buck Rogers in the 25th century is what I'm asking you?
You know, I would not be particularly surprised.
He has an extended run of bits with a clock face that is telling him he's bad at taking care of plants. And it's like, was there not enough plot? There are space vampires involved in this. He's like, maybe you're not the best person to take care of plants. It's like, why would I care? Why would I care?
I think that they felt that they needed to have a little comic relief.
Oh, there's plenty of comic relief.
Yeah, but I meant like intentional comic relief.
And then when we're back at the singles bar, which Wilma's not buoyed by either, neon green drinks or fried space discs or dicks for that matter.
Hey, yikes.
Listen, I don't know what's in the space discs, to be honest with you.
I think he just said like protein or something like that.
Well, dicks are great protein, Gina. They're a nice lean beef.
Are we going to have to do one of these, like, 18 and over warnings for this again?
I think it's listed. I think people know. Buck keeps trying to lighten the situation. And then basically he has a breakdown where he's like, if you don't start laughing at my shitty jokes, my penis will be sad. And in the background, there's a woman with her whole ass hanging out. Now, this is not a complaint, but this was a detail that I did not catch upon my first time watch in 1980. Well, and I've not watched it since.
I was going to say, I mean, if you pointed out, hey, mom, you can see that old lady's butt. You would never be allowed to watch that show again.
Oh, my mother was very concerned with this show. There is a princess in this show that literally dresses like Vampirella. And she was great. And she's nowhere to be found in this episode. And if there's anyone I want to see go up against a space vampire, it's Princess Amidala. But it's not Amidala. What is her fucking title? I can't even remember.
Oh, I don't even remember.
It's Princess something or other. Believe it or not, this show had was a runaway hit that only lasted two seasons because a producer came in the second season and torpedoed the fuck out of it.
No more space vampires.
No more space vampires for you. It was too expensive and people didn't like their new direction. And he put Wilma Deering in kind of like a flight attendant costume, and then she drove a bigger ship, but she was completely nerfed, like even harder than in Space Vampire. But I think women showing their whole asses in 1980 was exceedingly rare. But finally, after this, we get to meet our space vampire, who could only be described as Count Chocula if I fucked up this joke. And now we finally meet our space vampire, who can only be described as Count Chocula if chocolate was replaced by balls. Balls on his head.
He sort of looks a little bit like, who was the Great Gazoo? Is that the is that the little alien on the Flintstones?
Yes.
Because he looks kind of like that guy.
He does. I also described him as Count Cauliflower Testicles, but I wasn't sure which way to go with it.
I mean, you gotta streamline that a little bit. You gotta go for like Count Cullaballs, Cullaballs or something. Count Cullaballs. Cauliflower Testicles. That's too much. That's too many syllables.
That's very true. You know, I should learn to edit a little bit more. That's absolutely correct. And so the one thing I noticed upon my first rewatch of the show after four entire fucking decades was that they only do the front part of Erin Gray's hairdo. Like in front, it has those 70s waves. And then in back, it looks like she's attending a funeral.
So she's got that like kind of false front.
Yes. She has a hair facade.
Like a building that's only like a building on the front, and you turn to go back, and there's nothing back there.
Yeah, like a false front, absolutely. That is just framing her face, and you look back, and they've just like combed it straight. That is not something you see a whole lot.
Well, I love that when she is eventually, I guess, possessed by the vampire, or turned into a vampire. Yeah.
Yeah.
Her hair, you know this, and then this is very much a thing in 70s horror, is that her hair gets bigger. Oh, I forgot two more comparisons I could make to mm-hmm. what the space vampire looks like.
Sure.
For a younger audience that might not recognize some of our dustier references, like the Great Gazoo, for instance. he looks like Megamind, the villain in the children's, I think it might have been DreamWorks movie that came out some years ago.
With a more bifurcated head, though, to really drive that ball-centric look forward, yes.
And then he also sort of looks like Myron Reducto from Harvey Birdman. It was one of my favorite characters in all of animation.
Oh my god, man, that show was so fucking good. It's criminal how good it
was. One of the cornerstones of my sense of humor.
I feel like I was like, I don't know if this was worth it, you know. Obviously there's some part of me that was drawn to this because I was actually scared of it as a kid. And then we get a scene in which the vampire hunter has been recorded surreptitiously, and he fights himself while dressed in a silk pirate shirt.
Oh, it's great. It's very much like the scene in Fight Club where Edward Norton is just punching himself in the face.
Yes. I was also reminded of that one sensual dojo death in Nightmare on Elm
yes.
Street 4.
Yes.
Where they ran out of money and they're like, try to karate yourself. And he's like, okay.
Yeah.
When anyone says that's their favorite Nightmare on Elm Street, I'm kind of like, even the self karate death, that's your top? Really? Okay.
I mean, there is a clumsy charm to it, but if you're going to try to say that it's scary, that no.
No.
I mean, again, and thinking about, like, would this be scary to a kid? I am thinking about the scene in which all the bodies are laid out in the space morgue and then they all, like, rise up. And I'm like, that'd probably be pretty scary to a kid.
Yeah,
but also, going back to Salem's Lot, I feel like they ripped that off from a similar scene in Salem's Lot.
Sure.
Where a corpse rises up from in a morgue. And it is much scarier.
Yeah. I assume at this point they're like, all right, kids are kind of might be getting over Star Wars. This is before Empire Strikes Back comes out. So you're like, I don't know. Between this and the vampire laser sex of Universal's Dracula, maybe we should do a vampire episode. Like, oh, sure. Do we have money for vampire sex? No. Also, he can't put his mouth on her neck. Just have
that's
him
a little
like...
Too, that's a little too sexy.
That's a little too sexy. Have him do the Crocodile Dundee. I'm gonna make this cattle go to sleep thing on her neck. Somehow, like, how do you it's even worse than making a vampire sparkly. This completely desexualizes.
Yeah,
a vampire
it's not
entirely.
A, you know, even, I mean, obviously you should be able to glean from our various descriptions of him. This is not your mom's Frank Langella vampire. This is not a sexy vampire.
Because Frank Langella could get your mom off. And I just don't think that this kind of, you know, broccoli testes is really going to fucking do it for anybody.
No, and I mean, it's as if they didn't make him look bad enough, then they give him this, like, enormous unibrow.
Which were shown in close-up multiple times, and it never looks like it's attached to his head. Not even once.
Yeah, they keep using... I guess he's hypnotizing people with his eyes, which, again, that's... Yeah. That's a Dracula thing. Fine.
Sure.
But they also keep using the same static shot of the close up of his eyes. Like they like,
yeah, they got it once and they never wanted to do it again.
Right.
So they reuse the same shot.
They glow red, make a little noise. And then this, and he can only see in a red filter apparently, which reminds me of that great shot in Popeye. When Bluto gets really angry and opens his eyes and everything is red. Like, is literally that, like everything is red.
Is that the reference that's being made in Kill Bill? when she, everything turns red?
I would love to think that it is. I just feel like Quentin Tarantino would very animatedly talk about what a great movie Popeye is. And you know what? You know what? He's fucking right.
We learned that their laser pistols are very delicate. They're not very large. They're petite.
Another thing I love is that Buck has this object that he says, oh, I think this might be a 25th century version of a cross. Yeah. And Wilma does not confirm this, which I think is a little weird. And I don't know. She just sort of looks at him like, yeah, I guess. And it's like, well, you should be able to tell him, yes, that's a cross, or no, that it's an Ankh or a Star of David or, you know, like a, you know, the 25th century version of like, you know, wearing a Coke spoon around your neck.
But when he touches it to the space vampire's skin, he violently reacts to it. So we at least know that it works. In between multiple establishing shots that were on a space station, like I fucking get it. I watched the beginning of the show. Vorvon, that's the space vampire's name. He manages to finally corner Wilma, seducing her, and then sends her after Buck, who manages to burn her with the random jewelry he picked up in Arizona, by the looks of it.
Yeah. This definitely has that you know, cool uncle, you know, cool 70s uncle belt buckle thing going on.
Yes, exactly.
It really looks like, say, Keep on Trucking or Ass, Gas, or Grass, Nobody Rides for Free, you know, No it Fat looks Chicks. Like
it looks like a swell hat band centerpiece for a cowboy hat. Like that, it would look swell in. Although it is kind of surrounded by Grandma Doily, but I know. Maybe you can carry it off. Maybe I can't. So he's like, you know what? We're going to go to a different place. We're going to have all these souls to suck the life out of. You're going to love it. And they get into Buck Rogers' spare spaceship that he bought with his own money, I guess. Fuck if I know. But Buck has booby-trapped it so that when it goes through the Stargate, it'll go straight into a star. But it has Wilma on it, so he has to take off and somehow convince her not to get into the escape pod and leave, which was set up in the very first scene in the show. And then the spaceship just crashes into a star. The only important thing that we learn in this whole thing is that in the 25th century, signage will all have that SpongeBob meme capitalization where it's like small, large, large, small, 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 large, large, small, small, large. But in like robot font. Like, who thought this was a good idea? This is how you tell people they're stupid, but this is Buck Rogers in the 25th century. So if we're going to choose our own death venture, it's pretty much in between, be held under sway, in between life and death by, you know, Count Collie. What did we call him?
Collie Balls.
Dr. Collie Balls.
Or Dr. Acula. From the Mystery Science Theater 3000 movie, Uncle Scrotor.
Uncle Scrotor. Oh, wow. Yeah. So it's either that or get flown straight into the sun. Which one would you choose and why?
Straight into the sun. Why not?
I mean, you get a lot of yellow and purple lightning going on awful all around you.
Yeah, well, that's all right. You know, that's a pretty groovy way to go.
The only other death that is presented in this episode is the plant that Buck has given this other character to take care of, and it obviously died Dr. Hewer. So would you like to be, you know, killed by Dr. Hewer over a period of time, which looks to be very short?
Well, I don't know. Like, that seems like the flying into the sun thing, that seems quick. I mean, the plan, yeah. I mean, even a day or two dying is too long.
This is very true. Yeah, I'm also going with flying into the sun in the space Winnebago. That's the way to do it. Anyone who tells you anything different is lying. That just about does it, unless you have anything else to say about Buck Rogers in the 25th century's space vampire.
You know, it was an amusing episode, but also at some point I had to check how long the episode had left because it felt very, it felt very long.
I have a new idea that I'm going to maybe do with Ollie. He's very into this idea called You Made Me Watch. And I'm going to be forced to watch what he wants me to watch. And then I'm going to force him to watch shit like this.
You know, I sort of feel like a kid would get a kick out of this, though, because kids don't really care about like shitty special effects. I think that he would find that this, you know, how corny it is to mm-hmm. I think he would find that entertaining, you know, especially thinking of in terms of you were about his age when you watched this. And I think certainly if you emphasize, oh, this was really scary when I was your age, I think he would find that very funny.
He does love to make fun of me. So, yes.
Well, I mean, what other purpose do you have in having a child and someone who can constantly bust your stones over and over? And you know what? I'll tell you something. As the parent of an adult child, it does not stop.
I've got that to look forward to. So, yeah, that pretty much does it. Next month will be our listener's choice. You will choose what we watch and talk about. So please do that. Thank you very much for supporting us here on Patreon. You help keep this show free for all, and you are paying for new artwork every single week and new songs that are going to start premiering on the main feed and other places very soon. And all the t-shirt artwork and stuff like that. We have the t-shirt shop. You can also please make a selection there. That would be great to help pay those artists. And that just about does it for myself and for Gina. Goodbye, everybody.
Bye.